Welcome to KHOE 90.5 FM and the program What's New on Campus. Today we have as our guest Dr. Elaine Ingham, who is here at Maharshi University of Management as a guest teacher and lecturer in the Sustainable Living Program. And Professor Ingham is currently teaching Living Soils course here at Maharshi University of Management. On Monday, this coming Monday, she's going to be giving a talk on healthy soils at the Agricultural Center in Dalby Hall at 8 p.m. A little bit on her research, just quite an amazing amount of information after we Googled her. Elaine obtained her PhD from the Colorado State University in 1981, and she has a doctorate in microbiology with an emphasis on soil. She was offered a postdoctoral fellowship with her husband, Russ, who also has a doctorate from Colorado State University in zoology, emphasizing nematology. You have to tell me what that is sometime. At the Natural Resource Ecology Lab at Colorado State University. In 1985, Elaine accepted a research associate fellowship at the University of Georgia. In 1986, Elaine moved to Oregon State University and joined the faculty in both forest science and botany and plant pathology. She remained on faculty until 2001. Elaine is also an affiliate professor at graduate research, both South Cross University at Lismore, Australia in 2001 and to present, and was program chair at Ecology Society of America from 1999 to 2000. Welcome, Elaine.
I'm glad to be here. It's great.
Well, you're right in the middle of the breadbasket of the world, so they say, so your wealth of information, I'm sure, is being gratefully accepted, especially by
the
students.
Great agricultural state. It's a great place to be talking about agriculture.
That's right, it is. Now, you're currently teaching a soils course, and tell me, what is your first take on Iowa and the Sustainable Living Program here at MUM?
It's exciting to be here working with the people in the Sustainable Living Department. They're doing some very interesting things and working pretty hand-in-hand with the kinds of things that I've been seeing work around the world. Uh-huh. So it's great to be here with kind of fellow spirits, kindred spirits, and chatting and talking about what they're seeing, what I'm seeing, and the fact that we've been pretty much observing very similar things. Uh-huh. Now, I've been working with all kinds of agriculture all over the world, so I have maybe a little bit broader span of knowledge about how things are happening in other places. Uh-huh. But then, you know, looking at this particular habitat, these soils, the specifics about this climate, every place on the planet is unique. And so to really adapt what I've been doing, have to work with local people to make sure that what I'm offering remains practical for the growers here, for people trying to grow the crops that you grow here.
Yes, and I guess the history of this area is, as you well know, has been a lot of agriculture, a lot of agribusiness, big farms and chemicals and that sort of thing. And it must take its toll over the years, but I guess it's all reversible. It can get back to being good soil again.
Yeah, luckily Mother Nature has that designed into the system where when something fairly catastrophic happens, which is a bit of my attitude about the last 50 years of pesticides and toxic chemicals that have been applied in these systems, she's already got ways to figured out to reverse those kinds of losses. Uh-huh. We can, of course, help the process go much faster than if we wait for Mother Nature to replenish and fix things. So there's a lot of management that we can do to bring us back into a sustainable system where we don't have to use toxic chemicals or pesticides or high levels of inorganic fertilizers. We can reduce our tillage. And when we do that, we reduce water use. So in a lot of places, right from the very beginning, we can reduce water use by more than 30%. Mm-hmm. In some places in Australia, South Africa, other places around the world, we've been able to reduce water use overall by 70% as compared to the conventional system. We don't use pesticides. We don't need to use them. We don't have diseases. We don't have insect pests. We don't have weeds in our system. So helping growers learn how to be sustainable, reduce their costs by a serious amount. When we've worked with growers of tomatoes, for example, in South Africa, we've reduced their costs by over $40 million on an annual basis as compared to the conventional agriculture that they were performing before.
Just by implementing a little common sense?
Yeah, by putting the biology back to work for you. But we've been doing so much to destroy that biology in the soil, the set of organisms that are supposed to be functioning in your soil, with the toxic chemicals, with the tillage, with all of those things we've been doing. With the best of intentions, we did that. But it isn't leading us where we need to be. And we do have to reverse course a bit and start following a more sustainable approach.
I notice you have quite a list of publications, and I was interested in the soil biology primer. It's like there's about five different chapters. Like, were they different, separate books in themselves? Or?
There are, I think it's seven chapters in the soil biology primer.
Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the book.
It's the first chapter is about the soil food web and all of these processes that we're talking about that allow you to reverse, and you don't have to use the pesticides, the inorganic fertilizers, reducing water use, all of those things. And then each chapter of that book, the rest of them in the book, are about the different organism groups, the bacteria, the good guy bacteria, the bad guy bacteria, the ones you don't want, the ones that you do want, and how do you select for the beneficials and not the diseases. Fungi, same thing. How do you select for the good guys and prevent the bad guys from being the ones that live and grow in your agricultural systems? Protozoa, why would you care that you have protozoa in your soil? They're critical organisms, especially when we're trying to grow corn or wheat, the typical crops grown here in Iowa. We have to have those protozoa in the system. If you ever want to get rid of the requirement for buying inorganic fertilizers and allow the system to find its own nutrients, the nutrients are there in your soil. You don't have to be putting the inorganic fertilizers out. You have to put the life back into the soil so we can obtain the nutrients, convert them from a plant unavailable form in your soil into a plant available form. And there are literally hundreds of years of plant production. The nutrients perform that plant production in your soil. There's no need to add more inorganic fertilizers, which then, of course, have all of the runoff implications, the destruction of water quality, erosion, all those kinds of problems come with the use of those toxic chemicals. So fungi, protozoa, the good guy nematodes as opposed to the bad guy nematodes. You talk to most of the people who sell those chemicals, they won't tell you anything about the beneficial nematodes, which is, of course, the way you get rid of the root-feeding nematodes, the bad guy nematodes. So people who have those kinds of root-feeding nematode problems, let's permanently get rid of those root feeders instead of every year you've got to go in and try to deal with them and knock their numbers back, and they come back at you, and then you knock them down some more and they come back. And ultimately, who wins that kind of war?
The tug of war.
They do. So we've got to start curing the problem instead of just playing games with symptoms.
Well, it's common practice in the majority of Iowa farming areas to monoculture. Is monoculture sort of a... It doesn't help that process, I guess.
There are ways around it. So if you have to do a monoculture system, and really the way our agriculture, our marketing system is set up, you are still stuck with that monoculture kind of system. Well, but we have ways to help growers move around that. So we're getting back into the soils, the diversity of food resources that this myriad of organisms need to have in order to be there, performing their functions, helping your plants. So we'll put in understory plant species. We'll use organic matter applications into the soil, very small amounts. We don't need much. But so, you know, a ton of compost per acre. Or if you can't find that much good compost, we'll turn a little bit of good compost into a liquid form, and then you apply the foods for the organisms and the organisms themselves in that liquid form. So it's, you know, it fits right in with all the equipment that the growers already have. It's not a huge investment. It's, you know, a tank, a pump, some some cleaning material to clean out your spray tank so we get rid of the toxic chemicals in those spray tanks.
Oh, I see. And then you wrote about the soil food web, its role in ecosystems and health. And tell us a little bit about that.
The soil food web is the sets of organisms that I was talking about that's covered in that soil biology primer.
Uh-huh.
Soil biology primer was commissioned by the USDA,
uh-huh.
and so it was written for them, and it's available through the Soil and Water Conservation Society uh-huh. for people who want to get a copy. So the soil food web and in production systems, it's very easy to do the conversion. Typically, we're going to complete the conversion for people to a sustainable system. We'll complete it within the first growing season.
Uh-huh.
So you don't suffer a couple of years of loss of productivity. In general, we will see increases in yield. We mm-hmm. don't like to promise that you'll get that. It's kind of an additional benefit along with all of the reduction in costs and the reduction in buying water and those kinds of concerns. You'll typically get a yield increase, typically on the order of about 20% yield increase.
Oh my gosh. Does the USDA, do they send you around and tell people these things? Or
there's a lot of skeptics still in the USDA.
Yeah.
They'd like to see, 20 years worth of research on this before they are going to put their weight behind it. And, who's funding this kind of research? So we do a lot of work with individual growers
mm-hmm.
that are proving to all of their neighbors
uh-huh.
that this is possible, that it works. We work with some of the USDA people in a number of different places.
Mm-hmm.
So in Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, in Arizona, New Mexico, so lots of USDA people. But they're kind of one individual researcher in the whole group.
Uh-huh.
And they're the point infection that's proven to everybody else in their research station that this really does work.
Well, that's great. I'm sure glad that there's folks like you around besides the regular people who USDA usually turn to. This is amazing that they actually turn to you. I was quite impressed. Now, you seem to be an expert in compost tea. Are you going to tell the Monday night crowd that are going to come here and listen to you and tell them how to make compost tea?
I'll try to get that far along. My goal really on Monday is to introduce them to the organisms and the groups and so why do you have to have these things
uh-huh.
in there, and then briefly go over production of good compost,
uh-huh.
not stinky, smelly, black stuff. That's not compost. Putrefied organic matter will not have the organisms that you need. And you have to make good compost first
mm-hmm.
before you can turn it into a liquid form.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the name for one of the forms of liquid compost, really, is to extract the organisms out of the compost using water
uh-huh.
and then put some food resources in there with adequate oxygen to increase the numbers of the organisms that are operating at the temperature conditions that you're brewing at,
uh-huh.
which should be ambient. It should be the same as outside the place where you're going to be putting those organisms, expecting them to do their work.
I see. Very good. Now, well, you seem to be a person who might be sought after by farmers and by gardeners and other people interested in preserving the soil and getting it healthy and getting good food from it. Tell us a little bit about your website and how to get there.
Soilfoodweb.com
uh-huh.
is the website, so it's all one word, all lowercase, .com. And there's a lot of information on there, a lot about the laboratories that we have laboratories all over the world that we work with. And there's basically a book that's on that website. You have to go looking through, about us. The SFI approach is what you want to find on that website so you can get to the book. There are sections on how to make compost, how to make compost tea. So someone who wants to go to the website and look through the chapters and
uh-huh.
find those particular chapters, the information is on the website for allowing you to figure those things out.
Uh-huh.
We have books, so the whole books of about the manual for making compost tea. The Soil Food Web, lots of publications.
Uh-huh.
We do a fair amount of work with hydroponics people.
Uh-huh.
So we have a book called Adding Biology that is for the hydroponics industry.
Uh-huh.
If you'd like to convert from chemical hydroponics to organic or sustainable hydroponics, really easy to do.
Is that a big field these days? Are people getting into that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a really large field. You go to certain parts of the world, and you can see acres and acres and acres of land under glass. We work with some growers in Spain that probably have about 15 miles worth of square miles worth of acreage under glass.
Oh my gosh, would a greenhouse here in Iowa work with something like that?
Absolutely. And we can typically heat a greenhouse through the winter time with a compost pile. And you just have to learn that, so you're not using expensive diesel or propane to heat that greenhouse, because that's really what prevents people from being able to grow plants through the winter time is it's typically so expensive to heat that greenhouse.
That's
true. A couple compost piles and you've dealt with that problem.
Gee, that's great. Well, I really encourage our listening audience to come out and listen to Dr. Ingram. She's going to be speaking Monday night in Dalby Hall in our Gerald Center at 8 o'clock. And just before we go, I would like to ask you, the sustainable living programs are springing up at universities and colleges all over the country these days. It seems to be pretty popular. It is here in Fairfield. Maybe you can tell us, how does the MUMs kind of stack up with the others?
I think it's right up there with the best.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think this is a very good program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's organizational situations always happen.
Uh-huh.
But you can't, you know, human nature occurs. So I think this is an excellent program and would encourage people to come here to MUM to learn this approach.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Elaine Ingram, thank you so much for coming in. And we want to, again, encourage our listening audience to come out, and you might ask her how to grow your garden better, and other such very important questions.
How do I get my tomatoes really big?
That's right. Maybe even just using water. Or she'll tell you all about that if you ask her, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
Well, thank you for coming in, and we look forward to your talk on Monday.
Thank you very much.
So this is Stan Stansbury from KHOE 90.5 FM. And the program What's New on Campus. Thank you for joining us. Please join us again.